Okay, so for anyone who's really involved in global supply chains, especially in aviation maintenance, you know, tariffs aren't just headlines, right? They're like a daily reality. They really dictate costs and strategy. Today, we want to try and cut through some of that complexity. Our mission on this deep dive is pretty straightforward. We're going to break down the basics, the background of tariffs, look into some really maybe unexpected legal challenges they're facing right now, and most importantly, give you some practical ways you might be able to cut down what you owe. This is all based on some really sharp recent analysis from inside the aviation maintenance world itself.
That's right. And this isn't just theory, you know?
Yeah.
It's about pulling out those key insights, the actionable knowledge, especially if you're in these global industries where, well, stuff moving across borders is just central to how you operate. Understanding this stuff can directly hit your bottom line.
Exactly. The bottom line impact is absolutely real. So to really get it, let's maybe start right at the beginning. For listeners who might be newer to the, let's say, nuts and bolts of trade policy, where does the power to even make tariffs come from in the US? Is it the president mainly, or is it rooted deeper constitutionally?
Well, the Constitution, it specifically gives that power to Congress. That's the root. But Congress has, over time, granted the president certain delegated authority, limited circumstances, but it's there.
Right. And we've definitely seen recent presidents use that authority, haven't we? Broad tariffs on goods from, say, certain countries, often linked to trade deficits. What's the thinking there? And then there's the other side, using them against specific countries for issues like fentanyl trafficking. How does that specific tool work?
Good question. So, when it's about trade deficits, the idea is pretty clear, really. Make imports more expensive. The hope is you spur domestic production, people buy local. And when it's targeted, like with the fentanyl issue, it's more like economic pressure, right? Trying to influence another country's policy or actions using, well, money, essentially. And in both cases, usually it's the importer who ends up footing the bill for that tariff.
Okay, but what often gets missed, and this is fascinating, is what happens next. When the US imposes tariffs, our trading partners, they don't just sit back, do they?
Absolutely not. No, they often hit back with their own reciprocal tariffs
On you.
into used goods. So for a global industry like aviation, I mean, parts, services, constantly crossing borders, this just creates an incredibly complex, shifting regulatory landscape. Can mean a big, sometimes really surprising new set of costs that just weren't there before. Adds layers of financial hassle, logistical headaches.
Okay, now here's where our source material gets really interesting. It makes a pretty bold claim. The author strongly believes that current tariffs, specifically as they apply to aircraft parts, are actually illegal. Illegal. Wow. That's a strong statement, especially given these often come from executive orders. What's the basis for that? How could they be outside the law?
Right, and that's exactly where this thing called the Agreement on Trade in Civil Aircraft, or ATCA, comes into play. See, under ATCA, the United States explicitly agreed, way back, to eliminate tariffs on most imported aircraft and aircraft parts. And this wasn't just some handshake deal. ATCA became actual U.S. law as a congressional executive agreement, and then it was put into practice through various acts of Congress. So the core of the legal fight is how firmly that duty-free status for aircraft parts is set in stone. It's not just ATCA itself, but the laws Congress passed to implement it, federal law. Because of that, you normally need new legislation, another act of Congress, to undo it. But many of these recent tariffs, they came from executive orders. And the argument is, in many cases, the original power Congress gave the president just wasn't broad enough to let him override ATCA. It really throws their legal standing into question, you see.
Okay, wow. So what does this practically mean for, you know, for you listening, this idea that the tariffs are illegal? It's part of an active petition with the government right now, which means, yes, import duties are currently being charged on aircraft parts. That's happening today. But if a precedent gets set, if a court agrees they don't apply to aircraft parts, then importers who paid could potentially file for refunds. And we're not talking small change here. For major importers, this could be millions, maybe even hundreds of millions in potential refunds. It's potentially a massive financial shift just waiting.
Yeah, it's significant. But, you know, the legal world keeps moving. So the question isn't just are they legal today? It's also about tomorrow, what's coming down the pike. And what's on the horizon is that the Commerce Department has started these special investigations. One is a Section 232 investigation aimed squarely at aircraft, engines, and parts. The stated goal is to look at the trade balance and see if U.S. national security interests are somehow threatened by the way things are now.
That national security angle is interesting. And the source suggests maybe the findings could be Well, influenced by politics. More about getting leverage than pure security concerns.
Well, you could certainly argue there's a link between commercial aviation and national security, sure. But yeah, it's definitely worth asking if the findings might end up being driven more by politics, you know, the administration wanting negotiation tools rather than strictly national security. And you could even argue, kind of paradoxically, that tariffs here could undermine national security.
How so?
Well, imagine, say, a tariff makes a critical part scarce or super expensive, a part needed for military transport planes, maybe, because they share supply chains with commercial jets. That could lead to U.S. job losses in related industries, shortages for defense, maybe even impact our ability to safely fly military aircraft. It's like potentially shooting yourself in the foot.
Right. So Section 232, if it goes a certain way, could give the administration the legal cover it needs to limit aircraft parts imports, maybe in ways the current tariffs don't allow. And crucially, our source notes that while ATCA was brought up in comments to this investigation, ATCA doesn't stop non-tariff barriers. Things like, what, quotas, limits on how many parts can come in, or other kinds of restrictions.
Exactly. Numerical limits, other restrictions. Mm-hmm. Those are still on the table under Section 232, even if ATCA blocks tariffs.
Yeah.
So yeah, new limits are definitely possible, even if the current tariffs eventually get struck down in court. And that's why the aviation industry is watching the Section 232 investigation like a hawk. It seems to give the administration way more options than the current tariffs. Now, these investigations, they take longer, they require specific findings. But yeah, even if today's tariffs fall, Section 232 could still seriously disrupt aircraft parts imports. It really could reshape things.
Okay, so given all this complexity, potential change, what does this actually mean for businesses in aviation maintenance like right now? Let's switch gears to practical strategies. How can you minimize these tariff burdens? The source really stresses that getting your declarations right is crucial. And hey, if you made a mistake, sometimes an attorney can help you fix it and maybe even get a refund.
Yeah, absolutely. And a really good place to start often is Chapter 98 of the Harmonized Tariff System. This part of the code has special tariff numbers, special codes, specifically designed to reduce or sometimes even eliminate duties if certain conditions are met. It's a really powerful tool if you know how to use it.
Okay, let's break down strategy number one then. Returning U.S. origin goods. So picture this. A U.S. repair station gets parts from a customer outside the U.S. They're coming in for repair. Technically, even if it's temporary, that's an import when they cross back into the U.S. The absolute key here is where the goods originally came from, their origin. If they were made in the U.S. originally and crucially they haven't been advanced in value while they were overseas, then they can usually come back in under special Chapter 98 code. The example given is if U.S. goods are normally under heading 8807, the return code is 9801.00.1079. Knowing the exact code is important for the paperwork, obviously, but the big idea is U.S. origin, no value added abroad equals duty-free return.
Right. Makes sense. Okay, strategy two, temporary importation for repair and export, sometimes called the in-bond provision. This is for when you're bringing in foreign goods, but only temporarily, specifically to repair them, and then you fully intend to send them back out of the country. These can often come in under HTSUS heading 98813. That's the temporary in-bond code. Now, this usually involves some extra paperwork, maybe posting a bond, and there's a time limit. Typically, you have about a year to get the part repaired and exported again to avoid the tariff, though you can sometimes get extensions. It basically lets you use the U.S.'s repair shop without paying the full import duty.
Got it. Okay, strategy three. Repair work done abroad, but paying duty only on the value of that repair work. This is pretty common, right? A U.S. repair station sends a component out to a specialist shop, maybe in Europe or Asia. So sending it out as an export, getting it back as an import. But here's the clever part, the kicker. You don't always have to pay duty on the full value of that expensive component when it comes back. Usually the duty is calculated based only on the invoice price for the work done overseas. So the example was like $170,000 U.S. part sent to France for a $10,000 repair. If the duty rate is, say, 10%, you pay 10% of the $10,000 repair cost. That's just $1,000. Huge difference compared to paying 10% on $170,000, right? And that specific code is 98802.00.5060.
Exactly. A really significant saving there. Okay, strategy four. Sourcing U.S.-made alternatives. Specifically, thinking about FAA PMA parts. I mean, part of the whole point of tariffs, from the government's perspective, is to encourage companies to source domestically, to buy American. So if you're looking for alternatives that just bypass tariffs altogether, FAA PMA parts are a good place to look. These are parts made under specific FAA approvals for design and production. Because they're products of the United States, they're often available right here. And, crucially, even if you happen to import one from, say, a foreign warehouse where it was stocked, it's still typically duty-free because its fundamental origin is the U.S. That origin factor is key.
Right. Origin keeps coming up. Okay, finally, strategy five. Creating a foreign trade zone, or an FTZ. Explain this one. How does an FTZ work?
So the basic idea of an FTZ is when goods enter that designated zone, physically located in the U.S., they haven't technically entered U.S. customs territory yet for duty purposes. The really big advantage is this. If those goods are later exported directly from the FTZ, say to a customer in another country, then no U.S. import duty ever needed to be paid on them.
Ah, okay. So it's like a holding area outside of customs rules.
Kind of, yeah. It's incredibly useful for businesses that do a lot of importing and exporting. It gives you flexibility. You bring goods into the zone, and then you can decide later whether their final destination is inside the U.S. market, in which case you'd pay the duty then, or outside the U.S., meaning no duty is paid. Great for cash flow, great for managing inventory that might go different places.
Okay, wow. So there you have it. That's our deep dive into Paris in the aviation maintenance world. We've gone from the constitutional basics through these really quite surprising legal fights happening right now, especially around ATCA and aircraft parts. We looked ahead at those Section 232 investigations and what they might mean. And then, hopefully, most usefully, we laid out five concrete strategies you might be able to use to minimize your own tariff obligations.
Absolutely. And, you know, in a world just flooded with information, getting into these kinds of details, these nuances,
it's
not just academic, is it? For anyone in a global industry, knowing this stuff is really about making smarter, more strategic decisions, decisions that genuinely affect your operations, your costs, your bottom line. That's the real takeaway, I think.
Couldn't agree more. So as you go about your day, maybe here's something to mull over.
Oh.
Given these legal battles we talked about, the potential policy shifts with things like Section 232, how might these constantly shifting sands of tariff policy fundamentally reshape global supply chains, not just in aviation, but maybe even more broadly in the years ahead? What do you think?